Historic fires devastated.
In North Central,
it's already commenced.
Points of view can be shaped by mundane or traumatic moments. The national news outlets tagged our community's forest fires as the largest in Washington state history, and for a time in the country. In the weeks prior, I had found a necklace made by an ex-girlfriend. The metal shaped into an H, a 2, and an O, the symbol for water. While at the same time, I had started reading the national best-selling book, Driving Mr. Albert, a memoir about driving Einstein's brain across country. And here I was, with a vehicle readied for evacuation, filled with items, such as a copper urn. Perspective is unique for each individual person. Some lost more than others, some lost physically less, yet felt a heavier emotional trauma.
Relámpago curioso.
Neugieriger Blitz.
Relámpago curioso.
This is Curious Lightning. I'm your host, Dakota Lacroix. We'll call this one Perspective.
And I think what we witnessed this past summer, the summer of 2014, is by far the most extreme, devastating fire activity I've seen locally here, if not even nationally.
Bill Moody could be considered royalty in the smoke jumping history books in which he is still helping to write. He's been jumping out of airplanes longer than I've been alive. He's consulted prime ministers and been called to action all over the world to manage wildland fires from the sky. So on this day when I was caught up in an accidental fire with the potential to set more records, and unknown to me at the time, one being fought from the air by this very man I had interviewed years earlier, only a few miles away from this fire. Me, witnessing from the ground. Bill, from the air. Two perspectives, one fire.
And I think all of the elements just happened to line up. We had a period of a lot of moisture in the spring, which resulted in a lot of grass, which coupled with very high temperatures and 100 plus for several weeks, and the low humidities and the wind, all these factors came together, and so once we had the fires starting, we had very, very rapidly moving fires and some extremely dry fuels, and this was just coupled with several days back-to-back of very, very high winds, which is one of the major factors as far as fire spread. The priority came out number one, so as soon as these aircraft were available, coming back from drops in Oregon fires, they immediately assigned them to Rising Eagle, which at that time had the highest priority in the region, the Pacific Northwest region, if not in the nation, because for several weeks, the Washington-Oregon had the highest priority nationally.
Have people standing around in awe, like myself. People now are kind of dispersing and backing away and realizing that this isn't the direction they can go.
Actually, the day of the Rising Eagle, August 1st, was my first full day of assignment to the Carlton Complex. So with a delay of even an hour or two, some of these resources would have had just major, major impact. The other thing from an aerial standpoint, my standpoint, where I'm circling about 2,000 feet above the incident, directing the aircraft, trying to define the strategy and tactics, the placement of the air resources, and most importantly, trying to manage the airspace. It's just not happenstance. We have protocols. We have very, very experienced aerial firefighters in the fixed-wing aircraft and the helicopters that have fought a lot of fire. We just kind of fall into our training and our protocols, and try to manage this so that we ensure aviation safety. So airspace management is my major concern, and we can only really effectively in a fire, which that fire was actually relatively small, we can only manage so many aircraft safely with within that airspace. So that's why we limited it to probably five or six helicopters working out of the same dip site, and eventually we had six to ten fixed-wing aircraft working on another part of the fire, and that just pretty much maximizes the safety and the potential for an aviation incident or accident.
And again, looking into the air, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a sixth helicopter behind me, filling up water at this moment, and it's moving so fast and intensely that I can feel the heat of it from the distance that I'm at.
Well, I'm circling the air attack, our normal flight pattern in a fixed-wing aircraft, which is usually a light twin aircraft. I sit on the right side of the cockpit alongside the pilot, and we go in a right-hand orbit, normally at 2,000 feet above the ground or the action. And if we get air tankers, more aircraft in, we may go up to 2,500, even to 3,000. But just a continual circling of the fire, so you're observing all aspects of the fire, at least where visibility permits. In this case, there's a lot you couldn't see, both from the ground and from the air, particularly downwind where the direction the fire was going. You could see that the smoke column was going over Rising Eagle, knowing that there are a number of structures in that area. You just kind of lose sight. And hopefully the helicopters working at low level can work under that column. In some cases they can, some cases they're just obstructed. They can't safely fly if the smoke is too low into the crown of the trees.
This fire is raging up on Twin Lakes Road, and large plumes of smoke billowing up, and I have still not seen it cross the road. And from all appearances, they're dropping everything they can.
You're asked to respond to a fire such as the Rising Eagle. It might only be 3 or 4 minutes from where I was working. That has major implications in terms of fire potential. And you immediately have maybe a dozen resources at your disposal instantly. It doesn't give you much time to really process. So it's a matter of trying to previously to know where your resources are working, to know the capability of the different options you have. In this case, we had three we call heavy helicopters with 1,000 to 2,000 gallon capacity, which they can usually fill that that tank or that bucket within 45 seconds to a minute. Also knowing where the mediums, those with the lesser capacity, but where they're working, what's available, what's due for refueling if they're already in flight and operations, what's going to buy you the most. In other words, you try to instantly as you fly overhead is to consider the resources that you have within a certain time element, what those resources are capable of. In this case, it was a matter of we had the Medaw River and a good called dip site that we could initiate action out of. The other considerations there, what else am I going to need? And I need to get it in order, so that's a matter of, well, immediately knowing that the potential of the fire, and we knew that it was also going to need heavy air tankers or perhaps a DC-10, and then immediately placing an order, realizing that you would have probably 45 minutes to an hour response time, and so you got to figure out what you're going to do in the interim to be effective, and also knowing the capability of the aircraft when they come in. You also consider the effectiveness of water, which we had a plentiful supply of water in the Metau, knowing that we also had some lakes that we could dip out of or scoop out of with fixed-wing aircraft. So I immediately checked on Perigin Lake. Previously, there had been some called scoopers working that earlier in the Carlton complex. At the time, that lake was not really open for fire activity, but we quickly made the call and got the permission. And so I knew that I could operate certain number of aircraft out of Perigin, which would be very, very quick, called turnaround or quick response for multiple drops. And then as we got aircraft in to figure out, as I get fixed-wing aircraft, as I get more density, airspace density, with a mix of helicopters, a mix of fixed-wing aircraft and supervisory aircraft, how am I going to work them strategically to keep the flow going so and keep everybody, as many resources working as possible without conflicting the airspace? And so that becomes really, really the challenge is you know, safety is number one. The airspace management is so critical. And then again, as the fire goes through its dynamics over time, over area, its rate of spread, the volume, all the other fire behavior factors, you just try to factor all those things in with the resources. And then you're also, at the same time, you are trying to coordinate with the ground resources, with the person on the ground who's managing those resources, my counterpart, but a ground counterpart. Where the dozer's going to work, where the crew's going to go, the engines. And so you have all these things going all at one time, and you just really don't get time to sit back and relax.
The Okanagan County Fire Department just blew by me here, and it looks like National Guard or Federal, the helicopter here is just pinpointing specific structures to save here.
So you just circle, and with each circle, you just kind of reevaluate, see the progress of the fire, then to maybe redirect the resources where you think they are going to do the most. Strategically, we attempt to start at where the origin of the fire, we call the heel of the fire, and work up both sides or both flanks, and to eventually work up and then around, call the shoulder, and then around to the head of the fire. Eventually just encircling it, taking out the flame. In this case, the fuels were so dry we could knock it down with water. It would just be appear to be smoldering, then 5 minutes later it would crop back up, and so you had to redress that part of the fire. And so you're looking at the lateral spread, in this case was going uphill toward other structures, as well as the primary direction of travel or downwind, which you call the head of the fire, which is carrying it into Rising Eagle. So you try to again go from the heel of the fire up both flanks and eventually around the head to contain it.
And it's an unbelievable fluctuation between awe, I can hear the flames and ash falling around, and then suddenly the whites of somebody's eyes as they race by, race to a house or a location. It's challenging to make sense of it, of the back and forth, the pendulum that these fires create when nature and humans come together like this.
I've been in fires in Arkansas and North Carolina and Texas and Montana. It is a lot different emotionally when you're looking right down there and your neighbor's home. And you just have an extra maybe a sense of responsibility, which leads to, you know, a little more stress, maybe a little more impatience to get the resources there to save that structure before it goes up in flame. And so it indeed is a different perspective one gets when it's right in your backyard.
And I have a dual wing chopper overhead, and again, I think it looks like it's putting most of its energies on this house right here above
me.
As
it developed, you might say, a head of steam, and it was starting to spread embers downwind, starting additional called spot fires. So immediately under the burning conditions, I could see that it had extremely high potential. Kind of relating it to other fires I've been on, particularly some this past summer, that I knew where the fire was going to go, and I knew that my mind that we needed retardant in addition to, you know, working with the helicopters. And so I made that call just the first few minutes.
The winds are kind of calming, but they just dropped a pretty substantial amount of red fire retardant on a dry hillside just north of me, and I can't see down into this ravine.
I could see a fire already, maybe 5 to 10 acres, moving very quickly, and so I started assigning the heavy helicopters, those with a capacity of maybe 1,000 to 1,500 up to 2,000 gallons of water. We had three of those scattered around the Carlton complex, so I immediately contacted them, assigned them, as well as a couple of the medium helicopters, capability of around 300 gallons, to engage the fire. The pickup point for water would be on the Medaw River, just off the south end of the airport. That was what we called the dip site, and just gave instructions for them to pick up water at that point, proceed up the left side or the left flank of the fire, the west side of the fire, and began engaging the fire perimeter and any structures that were threatened either at the head of the fire or on that left flank. The fire was pretty much on the right flank or the east side, was going to burn right into the highway, which would form pretty much a natural barrier, that or the Medaw River. So it was a matter of engaging the heavy helicopters, the medium helicopters, and also ordering more resources.
But I also see a private jet, or what appears to be a jet, flying a mile up in the sky under me, and above that is that large tanker gaining a lot, just screeching high into the sky and gaining a lot of elevation as this strike team that I talked to earlier makes their way down valley southbound, snuffing out this fire at the moment, right in front of me, and just another distance of a football field or two, choppers are dropping a lot of water on a very specific area that I can't quite see, but there has to be structures there that they're working on.
I wasn't aware, but I kind of recall now around 2 p.m. Twin engine landing pretty much in the middle of all this activity, landing at the smoke jumper base.
And so I just interviewed a man driving an Escalade, and with a driver and a woman sitting in the front, and behind him, I just heard him say as he was pulling away, I've got the big man in the back. And so I'm not quite sure who the big man is. The windows were tinted, but they paused just 30 feet in front of me, double parked, and were watching the same flames as I was watching.
I didn't think much about it until later I learned it was the governor had landed for meetings with some of our local officials, and they were a little bit unannounced to me. I'm sure that others higher up knew about it, but it was kind of surprising, but I guess the governor and his staff were rather impressed by the level of coordination and how this fire was pretty much knocked down or in the containment stage before they left a couple hours later. Final act was the DC-10, which made a very, just a wonderful drop kind of on the northwest corner of the fire.
So 7:48, I'm driving down the back road that they're allowing people to drive on, and I see a large swath of red where the fire retardant was laid in, but flames just south of that on the hillside. There's no winds at the moment. It doesn't seem to be a lot of movement, but still very, very real and living, this fire.
At least a couple times a day, I would fly over Rising Eagle going to or from that fire. And each time I learned a little bit more, and I was amazed that that fire stopped where it did. And seeing where the fire burned right up to the deck of some friends, just how close that came. And so I did have an opportunity to fly over it in the past. I've done that too in other fires, critical fires, where in the course of the summer or the action, I'd be able to fly over and kind of think about how this whole thing played out, and the what ifs. And then other times, like even the Rising Eagle, I've driven up through there just to kind of look and see what I saw from the air and verify. And so, you take a very personal interest in it. I think Rising Eagle is going to become a case study for a lot of the air attacks in the Washington-Oregon region. There's always some place that's going to have a very, very critical, intense fire season, somewhat similar to what we witnessed this summer.
More often than not, the headlines are someone else's heartbreaking news, endlessly filtered through another's point of view. But when a story like this hits home, you realize it belongs to no one person. Because beneath the headlines, there's a community made up of infinite personal moments, some whispering, others shouting. These collective events can potentially weave together a fresh perspective and remind us that there's more than one way to see and interact with the world around us.
Curious Lightning is written and produced by Dakota Lacqua, with cinematic audio created by Spark and The Revolution. A very special thanks to Bill Moody for his time and knowledge. If inspired, share this independent show by continuing the conversation online or wherever you may be.
Be well and be curious.